All right. So I have Dan Gagliardi here on the podcast, finally. I mean to have you on for such a long time, because you're one of the people that I started with doing comedy.
It's true, yeah. We've known each other for 30, 40 years.
Feels that way. It does, really. Give it a hell. Yeah.
I mean, that would have been like, what, like 2015?
Yeah, 2015 probably. Was when I started doing stand-up. And
crazy.
It was the second place that I, because I started doing an improv show that I was on, and but you were the first mic Dylan Monegan told me about, and I was just like, it was such a cool thing, just how it was all set up. I guess you guys hadn't been doing it that long, like the mic was generally new. When did you guys start doing the Crust and Crumble?
It couldn't have been long before you started coming. Like, we also had no business doing it. Like, neither of us had been doing comedy for too long before we started hosting it. We also had no idea what we were doing in terms of, like, setting it up. And we got really lucky with that mic, because, like...
No, we got super lucky with it.
They were the first place... They were not the first place we asked, but they were the first place that said yes. And so we just, like, started showing up with the PA every week, and they were super cool, even though... I'm sure if you were just like trying to get some pizza and you walked into a room full of miscreants like that, you'd probably like,
it's a thing. Super thrilled, but... Yeah, it's a thing now that's like, it's kind of coming back in comedy a little bit, but like, I feel like it's so weird to talk to like younger comics that started like around COVID or after COVID, because you sound like a crazy person. Like, no, we used to perform in front of actual people, and sometimes they'd be game for it, and sometimes you'd be like, oh shit, now I have to do my dirty jokes in front of like a 5-year-old while they're eating.
Yeah. It was kind of a cool workout in that regard, right?
Like, yeah.
You could win over the people who happen to stumble in.
Yeah.
Totally unawares. Like, that was a real, that always felt like a real victory.
And it was super cool because, like, to me, it was sort of like the first meeting of everybody. Like, it was just like so many people that I met. And it just sort of, like, formed, like, really quickly with so many more people joining. And it was really, like, a great, like, just time period of, like, okay. And for me, I was, you know, 21, 22. It was, like, I was younger than everyone. So it was, like, such a crazy, like, experience to be, like, okay, these people are, like, 3-4 years older than me. And I, like, I could have been friends with these kids when I was, like, 7. It's, like, you know. It's, like...
Totally.
I felt that immediately with you guys. You were so welcoming and everything. And I was just...
I mean, that was, like, that was something we really kind of wanted to emphasize, too. Because, like, I mean, you know, like, you walk into some rooms and it's, like, incredibly hostile. And
oh, yeah.
Especially, like, in a scene as small as Asbury, like, it never made sense to me that you wouldn't, like, want to foster that as much.
Oh,
as
yeah, for sure.
Like, it's not, there aren't a ton of people, and like, you know, there's, I don't know, we'll all get better if we're not being like weird and cagey to each other.
Right.
I also think that room was cool. Like, I agree with what you said. Like, the sort of like communal vibe in there was really cool. And like, I think the fact that it was such a small space and not just like a performance venue.
No,
it was. Or not really at all a performance venue, but, that sort of, like, lended itself to, depending on the turnout and what the vibe was on a given night, it was either mostly just, like, a hangout session.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or we could just sort of, like, lock in and have it feel more like an actual show.
Right. And you and Rob have such an amazing chemistry that it really felt like it was done well. Like, I have this thing about open mics where, like, they don't have to be great. Like, I know they're not going to be great, but I have, like... The mildest, like, thing that just annoys me is, like, it has to be run at least a little bit well. And I always felt like, you guys sort of set the standards. Like, you have a mic, that's it. Like, you have a microphone that works. That's it. You don't need a whole lot.
Yeah, and I also just think it's, like, it also always felt like such a crush to me when you go to a mic and, like, people would sort of, like, harp on the inherent bleakness.
Oh, yeah. There was never that. Like, It was always cool because it was that, and it was like just learn. It was cool because it was like the starting point for a lot of us.
Yeah.
So it was cool when like a couple of years later, like when we started going to the Brighton Bar, it was like the people that started with us there, it was sort of like the smelting pot. Like, oh yeah, this person started with us so many years ago.
Yeah.
And it was like such a cool thing to see like people evolve, like Jack Steiger, and like see people like they start at one point like as the person they are, and then you're like, oh wow, this person's such a better comic. You're closer friends with them. Well, it's like
the other thing I liked about our mic was like it kind of felt a little bit inverse to other mics, where I feel like people who are more comfortable in clubs would like come do sets or whatever,
right?
And not that they'd like bomb as a rule, but like the room, it was a different enough vibe that you kind of had to like recalibrate a little,
right?
And I think it was more amenable to like the Jack style people who were like willing to try things that were more, or I guess like less traditional,
right? Yeah, totally. You know what I mean?
Like, there was just, people were more game for that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, it's crazy, like, how, well, I was really bummed when Mark Henley moved to Jersey City, because, like, he's great there, but, like, he was, like, the heart and soul of that mic, and
yeah.
It was just amazing to see, like, that start of, like, him to where he is now. It's, like, he really, like, got that, because I always loved his charisma, and just, like, he really was able to hone that in with his big dog gimmick and everything. It was just like, he really...
Yeah, Mark is like, I mean, for as long as I've known him, like, he was always, even at that level, just like extremely serious and focused about getting better and figuring out what it meant to like succeed in different rooms and how to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And like, in that regard, I'm like, you know, he's also very funny, so, like, those two things put together, like, not really surprised to see him just, like, you know, having as much success as he is. And, like, also, classic, sort of, like, couldn't have happened to a better guy.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, like, oh, God, love him, yeah. Yeah, I remember also, like, the first, like, when I first started going up, Mark was the person who, like, came up to me, and was, you know, was, like, very encouraging,
mm-hmm.
and talking to me.
Right.
Which was, like, such a...
Yeah, that's such a wild thing when you're starting out. It's such a wild thing. Like, the person who's been doing it a little bit more than you, who talks to you, they give you that, like, that recognition that you need so early on. You really yearn for it, because you're just, like, you want to be good. Because you have an expectation of yourself of what is quote-unquote good at that point. You're like...
Yeah, and it also does this really important thing, I think, of uncoupling, like, your personal sense of worth from, like, your ability to do comedy.
Right.
Right? Like, if you can eat shit and then someone comes out to you and still treats you like a person.
Right.
Like, that's like, a huge early lesson to learn. They're like, oh, all right, I failed in this one specific way, but like,
right.
That doesn't mean I don't have a place here.
Because when you're part of that art form, people can see that you're trying. Like, that's the major thing with me. Exactly. Like, if you're trying, like, that's all that I can really ask. It's like, you know, I had to learn a lot, like, to change my attitude a lot with people of just, like, they're not going to have the same goals as you, Richard. So, like, people who did it just for fun, I'm just like, well, if they're trying, then it's fine. Like, you know, I won't be too much an asshole about it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it really is, like, it's pure trial and error.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's really, like, no, I don't know. It's not like music or something where, like, you're at least playing something out loud while you're practicing.
Right.
Like, when you're writing stand-up, it's purely in your head.
Right, it's all in your head. And
yeah, and then once you externalize it, a lot of times, especially when you're starting out, something happens on the way from your brain to your mouth, and it just turns into, like, absolute dog shit. Like,
right.
As soon as oxygen hits it, it's like...
Right.
You're like, oh no, I've made a terrible mistake.
And stand-up is like that one... is like... In our form, that's very cool because you can just think of jokes. Like, that was the one thing that I loved coming from, I wanted to be a screenwriter and I was a creative writer in, like, high school and stuff. And I was terrible because I would always, like, stop projects and start, like, new ones, like, in weeks. I'd be like, or, like, days. I'd be, like, working on, like, a new story and then I'd be like, no, I scrapped that. I'm working on something new. And it was fun to, like, that wasn't frowned upon. Instead, it'd be like, oh, I can just write another joke and people won't get mad at me like my teacher just would when I had no commitment to my stuff.
That's a good point. Yeah, especially, and again, especially in like a smaller scene, like you're better off not being like precious about material and like,
right,
bringing new stuff up almost every time you do it. Because like otherwise, I mean, you know, like people know what's coming.
Right.
Part. Like, I'm sure we can both think of examples of people who've done like the same joke the same way, kind of over and over, and expected different results.
Oh yeah.
Like, yeah.
I wanted to say this. You were talking about like how much you like Mark's stuff. I really was jealous of how good of a stand-up you were when I seen you do stand-up. Yeah, I was really, really jealous. I thought you were awesome. Like, I'm a big Patton Oswalt fan. I got a vibe of like that, like, style, if that makes any type of sense at all. And I was just like, yeah, he's so funny and so smart. And it was funny when you jumped to doing, you know, instead of doing stand-up, doing Warm Things. It was like, I was like, oh, it was probably too easy for him. That was my...
Oh my God.
It's like, he probably needed a challenge.
I will say, I feel like the Warm thing, like the sketch stuff always came way easier to me. Probably because, like, I mean, I think stand-up's the fucking hardest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it truly is.
And I think, like, what I liked about Warm Things is, like... it's a lot more, you have a lot more laterality. Like, you can basically do anything and kind of, like, build context around it. And the audience already has it in their mind, like, don't have any expectations here. Where I think stand-up is, like, it's kind of more, obviously there are, like, plenty of exceptions. But I do think it's, like, generally more rigid. Like, there's
for sure.
Expectation.
Well, it definitely is.
In that way, I'm a coward, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just interesting to hear that perspective, because, like, I was probably wrong that you probably had this, you know, this thing. It's probably true. But, like, to me, it's just funny perspective-wise to be like, oh, my God, he's so funny. And just, I always thought your stand-up was really, really great. And do you have any...
I never felt that way.
Oh, really?
I'm very surprised to hear that even one person thought that. I started before I was doing stand up. I was like a contributor, like a freelance contributor, for The Onion and Clickhole. So like my quote unquote professional background was always just more like on the writing side and
right.
Something, not that that's like sketch writing in form, but like just in terms of like you can throw anything at the wall and sort of like build an idea from scratch a little bit more. Like
right.
the expectations for what you're going to say and how you're going to present it are a little bit less rigid.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of, in a way, I felt like I was going back to that. And like, you're right. Like I did love Patton growing up. I don't know why I switched to past tense. I still...
Right.
But,
yeah. I don't know. That's just who I thought of immediately. It was just like...
No, totally.
That level, I was just like so... And it was just such an interesting thing to like just watch. Like, you know, and it was really an interesting like thing how that all formed because I got to see it. Like, Melissa did stand up a couple times and then like you guys started doing it, like Warm Things. And the really cool thing was like... When we started going to the Saint and, like, putting on shows there, we were doing, like, I never did theater in school, but it was kind of like that. Like, we did plays, kind of, like, with your sketches and stuff. It was, like, really cool.
I think the first two or three shows we did were just, like, full-on plays, and then we'd have a band play after.
Right.
How to structure something like that. And... Yeah, I mean, like, we always, like, intended to write, to do just, like, a straight traditional sketch show, and then we'd get an idea, and because we were, like, in our early 20s and had energy still,
right.
We would just, like, take an idea and just, like, push it to its absolute breaking point. By the end of it, we'd have, like, a full show.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, like, I mean, that's super fun, and it gave us the chance to sort of, like, like you know, work with like a full cast of people and learn how to, one, you know, produce a show with that many people involved, but then also right. just like run a rehearsal and like direct people, which is its own impossible yeah. skill. I feel like,
and like
I've yet to get a grasp.
No, on. And it's so different with comedians than actors, because we really didn't really consider ourselves actors, but like, and you guys considered yourself like sketch comedians, so it was an interesting thing to get comedians to cooperate that well. It was
totally
like magical. It was like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like part of it was like writing to people's personas a little bit. Like,
right, you could do
I
that.
I don't know how well you remember those shows, but like Mark was playing a big dog-esque type of guy.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Jack was playing like a Jack type guy.
Yeah, exactly. There was never enough, like, there was never pressure to be anything other than yourself, which is one thing that I think, like, is great for comedy in general and stand-up. Like, the one thing that I love when I'm doing it is when I can fully show my personality. Like, that's the way that I sort of like to word it is. If you can show me full, like, for, like, who you are, like, because stand-up is the best when you feel like it's conversational with the audience. Like, you can kind of, like, you have that rapport, and it's just interesting, like, to find that, because for so many times, and like for me, what was different was, you know, being younger, I didn't have that much to talk about, because when people start doing comedy, like mostly, like that I know at like 30, it's like you have 3 decades of shit to talk about. I just have my stupid opinions, and it's so funny, like I'm not as opinionated as I used to be in my 20s, which I think is like normal, and it's like I'm almost there, I'm 29, and it's like I don't have that anymore, where I used to be super opinionated when I started out,
yeah.
And now I'm have no opinions.
Early 20s behavior, like that is it.
Yeah,
you have extremely strong opinions, like and such conviction.
Yeah,
kind of miss it.
And then you get older, and you're just like, I don't care. I'm tired.
Yeah, you're like, wow, I was a real asshole.
Yeah, and yeah. That was an interesting thing that always happened, like socially for me. I used to talk about that a lot as podcasts. Like, you felt like. Did you feel like you got along with everyone super quick, like, in the, when you started doing stand-up and sort of joined, like, with everyone?
To various degrees, yeah. I mean, I feel like I always got along with everyone fairly well. I definitely had, like, a group of people I felt closer to.
Yeah.
But I also, like, I don't know, for better or worse, my approach to socializing generally is just, like, Don't be an asshole.
Right, exactly, yeah.
You know, let people feel as welcome as you want to feel.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, definitely there's, like, you know, very observable, like, cliques of people and stuff. And
oh, yeah.
I think I made peace with the idea that I just, like, you know, I might not be close with some people, but we're also not here strictly to be friends.
So right, okay. Exactly.
Because, you know.
That's the hardest thing with stand-up, too, is it's, like, it's, you sort of have to be friends by, like, you know, like, there's a lot of fake relationships, which is tough. It's, like,
yeah,
very, sure. Like, transaction-like. It's, like, okay, you'll do my show, and it's, like, yeah. It's a lot like that. But I just remember, like, I had so many moments where, like, I would put my foot in my mouth, and I'd think, oh, it's over the hill, hate me. And then they'd be like, we don't care about that. You're fine.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, that is kind of the nice thing. It's, like, everyone who does stand-up is pretty insane. So, like, you
right.
have kind of a long leash
and, like,
on how insane you can be.
And I guess the same thing with, like, musicians. It's, like, I've had so many, like, you know, I don't drink. It's, like, I've had so many I can't show my face moments. And I still show up. Like, you know.
Well, yeah, totally. Like, I also feel like that's a big part of how you navigate that, too, is, like, you keep showing up, and then that stuff kind of, like, fades. Like, you
right.
gotta basically give people more evidence that that's not
right.
who you are or who you want to be.
Right.
Like, if you do something stupid socially or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it is tough, though. Like, there are I don't know. I definitely had stretches doing stand-up where I do something humiliating, either on stage or off stage, and I just, like, you know, a month might go by where I'd be like, I'm not trying to show my face.
Right. And then,
you know,
and then it sort of becomes cool again, and you're like, okay, you're fine.
Yeah, exactly. The other nice thing is, like, I think stand-up requires a self-obsession, so, like, yeah, you really, like, sweat those sorts of social faux pas or whatever. But yeah. At the same time, like, everybody else barely gives a shit because they're very concerned about their own life.
Right. That's kind of, like, the thing. That's the one thing, too, about, like, being a very sensitive person. There's kind of like an ego that comes to it. You're like, you sort of realize, like, oh, people don't care. When you're insecure, you think people are, like, talking about you all the time, and then you're like, no, they're
not. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And, you know, it's like, it should be so obvious with stand-up, because it's like, why are you, your whole objective going on stage is to convince people to care about what you're saying.
So, right.
Like, the baseline is nobody cares, and right. Your job is to make
And you make, yeah, it's a very interesting just thing to be around. And it was, I just think about it, like, it was really a bummer when COVID happened. And, like, we were still, like, we were kind of removed from it for a little while. But it was a cool, it's just a cool period to think about. Like, just being in that space with people starting out and just being like, okay, this is the starting point. And it's so cool, like, to see now, like, I wanted to ask how you met Rob. Like, how did that whole entire, like, sort of friendship, like, start at?
Well, Rob and I are, like, cousins in the way that Italian people often are, which is that they're not related.
Right.
But just, like, your families are friends.
Oh, yeah.
My mom is his godmother.
Oh.
So I've known Rob my whole life. He's known me my whole life. So we've just, like, yeah, I mean, we've always kind of been in each other's lives. And, like, as soon as I was, like, old enough to not, basically as soon as I was, like, not a child, and, like, really what it was, like, I started watching, you know, I got very into, like, movies or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that, as you know, is Rob's, like, that's his shit.
Yeah.
He's a real movie guy. So kind of as soon as I was able to, like, talk about stuff and we had that common interest, we got closer. And then, yeah, I mean, like, when I was, like, I forget how old, but I guess it would have been, like, 2014 probably, mm-hmm. or 2015. You know, Rob had, like, a house and was, like, looking for a roommate or whatever, and I was just, like, living at home still, so he asked me to move in, and that definitely sort of, like, accelerated things, or, like, made us closer, because,
oh yeah, for sure, like
that, you know, when you're living with someone, that's kind of unavoidable.
Oh yeah.
He yelled at me once for not doing the dishes, and he was right to.
Right. But, like, no, it's a weird concept when that happens. Like, I live with Kong now, VJ, and it's just like, it's funny because, like, you have that, and, like, we get along great, which is, yeah, like, super cool. And it's just, yeah, it's crazy. Like, we're both moving out in October, and it's, like, so weird because it's been, like, 2 years and it doesn't feel that way like, at all. It's like,
totally, yeah,
it's like, oh,
it goes by quick.
It goes by quick. And it's just, yeah, those early, that's an early experience too. That's, like, great to learn, is, like, living with another person is, like,
yeah.
And also, like, it's good to be, like, around another comedian because you're in the same circles doing stuff, so that's a,
exactly,
that's a good,
yeah,
thing.
I mean, I don't know that the mic would have happened. I honestly don't know if I would have gone to other mics if I didn't have that sort of, like, buddy system there, because we started going together.
Right.
And so, like, I don't know if that would have happened. I don't know if us starting a mic would have happened. I don't know if we would have started a podcast. Like, everything sort of, like, came out of that time period, like that closeness of living in the same space.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's so cool to hear about that, like, that side of it. I had no idea, because it's like, it just seemed like you guys were close friends at that point, and it was cool to see that dynamic, because that's, like, one of the greatest things is, like, if you have hosts or, like, a good host, that's one thing for, like, an open mic or show that's, like, needed, is, like, hosts that are comfortable. Like, I'm so bad at hosting, yeah, so I never, yeah, do it,
no,
but, like,
likes,
it's...
No one likes hosting. It's mostly a chore.
Yeah.
So, like, and again, like, that's where the buddy system came in hand. Like, we would go up together. That was definitely something I cribbed from, like, I don't know, probably, like, what was that show, Hot Tub? The, like, Kurt Brownoller and...
Oh, yeah.
All live show or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you can just bring your friend up, and then you don't have to, You don't have to deal with the crippling fear quite as much.
You can just sort of have that communal, like, okay, we're doing this together, and it's sort of like a team thing. It's great. And
yeah, exactly.
I guess, when did you guys start doing King Me? Was that like a year into doing
stuff? Yeah, probably about a year. It's, it feels like we've been doing it forever. I think, yeah, maybe 2016 it started. I'm like trying to pull up the Apple podcast page to like quickly check. But yeah, because we started doing King Me after we started doing, what was it called? Introducing Mark Henley's comic book podcast.
Right. Oh, yeah, he had that podcast, like,
Yeah, that was like me pretending I was okay with not talking all the time, not dominating the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit, yeah, so we started at the end of 2015, but yeah, before that we were doing Introducing, which was Mark, Rob, and Jack.
Right.
And then I was just like working the mixer or whatever, and I would hop on occasionally. I don't really remember if that was like, if we started doing King Me because Introducing must have like tapered off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really remember the timeline all that too well.
Right. It was just to let everyone know, King Me is a podcast where you guys talk about Stephen King. Stuff like movies and books and stuff.
The official Stephen King movie podcast.
And
podcast of King.
It was just so cool to like hear you guys talk about something, the stuff you would do. And I love, I always forgot the name of it. You did like a parody song where you like sung really fast.
The King Trope song?
Yeah, the King Trope song.
Yeah, it's a.
I love that.
Chop Suey?
Yeah, it was like
for no reason.
It was just so impressive and so like random at first. I was like, "This is so like well
done." Yeah, that show is like it's weird to me how long we've been doing it. Partly because like you think we'd lose enough interest to stop, but also neither of us is like a huge Stephen King fan, or like we weren't going into it. I've become like fascinated with him.
Right.
The more we've done it. But like, we really just like, we said it on the show too. Like, we started doing the show because we liked the movie Silver Bullet, which I don't know. Have you seen that?
No. The only.
It's just like. Sorry, go ahead.
I like Misery. Like, that's. One movie that, like, that's the one horror movie that I can watch. Like, I like horror comedy. Like, I saw Renfield and I love that. But, like, to me, like, I don't like horror movies. My brother loves them. I never like them. But, like, I love Misery. It's just, like, you know. And that's, like, very dramatic and, like, intense. And it's just great. Like, there's so many iconic moments, too. It's, like... But that was like, and that episode where you guys talked about it was like one of my favorite episodes that you guys
did. Yeah, I mean, we also love talking about good movies. It's such a rare treat for us.
Because you guys were just like,
most of it's shit.
Like, it was the classic podcast thing if you guys would just have these, like, these bits and stuff with it. And it seemed like that's the best way to do a podcast, I think, is if you have, like, if it's not, like, your major interest, it's just something that you're learning about, you can sort of explore it, and then you look at it in a way where it's, like, you can look at the silly things with less reverence of you would if you were a super huge fan of it.
Totally,
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You'd be, like,
I mean,
you can sort of look from the outside in and be, like, this is silly. Right.
Exactly. And, like, that was kind of a calculation going into it. Like, I think we were aware that there were other Stephen King podcasts at that point. It would have been crazy to assume otherwise.
Right.
But, like, we sort of, like, you know, you listen to them, and they are a bit more reverent of him. And, like, that, you know, we give him his flowers when he deserves it, for sure. But it's also, like... Like, he's like anyone else. Anyone who's put out that much work is going to have, like, misfires.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, reveal things about themselves. Like, he's a weird guy. He famously, like, one of his most famous book has a scene with like, an interdimensional child orgy. Like, that's not normal human behavior. So, it's just weird to like pretend you can't take the piss out of the thing that you're like giving that much attention to. I feel kind of it's like dishonest to only look at the good parts of things.
Did you guys ever get any backlash from like hardcore like Stephen King fans at all, or was it mostly
no one really has gone out of their way to try to make us feel bad. Like, we got like one bad review on Apple Podcasts that was just like turned it off almost immediately because they disrespected the author. And I don't know, like I Googled us one time and found a forum where people were complaining that we were too woke.
I hear it a lot with podcasts like that I listen to. It's just like, it's such a weird like thing. It's like, oh, the people you're listening to are not assholes.
Like, yeah, very much. It's like, why aren't these guys being meaner? Why aren't they going out of their way to denigrate other people? Kind of how I feel. Like,
and I think people just...
But also, it's just... No, go ahead.
I think people just, like, they're so used to... Podcasting is so different from radio, because radio used to be just that. Used to be just like...
Yeah.
And it still is, like, if you listen to it, it still is just, like, that obnoxious level. And, like, podcasting is so different. Like, you're really... Like, even with this podcast, like, what I try to do is just... I just try to make people comfortable, and it's always that weird... Like, to me, I always have the, like, two things that I'm trying to do. I'm trying to do, like, an interview, but I'm also trying to make it, like, a conversation. Because you don't want to just throw questions at people, like, willy-nilly and... You know, I have to find ways to, like, accentuate, like, their skills and stuff and what makes them funny and what makes them interesting. So,
well,
it's a thing you have to do.
Can I just say?
Yeah.
I feel very interesting right now.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I mean, sure. I mean, you've been great. I know, and I'm so happy with this, you know. It's been great because you're very talkative, which is good. Like, that's the only hard thing.
That is. Not feedback I'm used to hearing.
You can probably imagine, you are probably used to it doing your podcast. Like, if you have a guest on, and it's, you know, it's not their fault. It's like, you know, some people just aren't that talkative. You gotta, like, find a way to, like, pass the time. Like, when I talked to you, it was, like, funny, because, like, I looked at the time, I was like, we've been talking for 13 minutes, it feels like we've been talking for, like, 2 minutes. It's like, okay, that's when I figure out, like, I like this, how this episode is going. Like, that's how I think of things. I'm like... That's what I feel, because if I'm talking to someone, it's like, it feels like it's dragging on. I'm like, okay, now I get self-conscious about if I'm doing a good job. I'm like, I need to...
That is the mark of quality.
But I mean, podcasting is that weird thing, because like, I have no like radio background or anything, so it was just like learning to do it on your own. And I guess you guys have each other to sort of work with. Did Rob have any like background in like... doing it before, or I guess he did the podcast.
He just apart from his dulcet voice, like he I don't think he has like any kind of like formal background, not that I'm aware of. We basically, I mean, you can, if like when you listen to the show, we reference other podcasts. Like, we just sort of like half-assed aped other things that we liked, and until we sort of like found our own. Like niche within that, basically, you know, what's that old, is it, I forget who's saying that, is that like a, like any great character is just like a bad impersonation.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that's like, yeah, kind of what we're doing, I think. And not that we're great necessarily, but I don't know why I said necessarily, not that we're great, period, full stop, but we definitely take, you know, take influence. Like, we know what kind of stuff works, and we were lucky that, like, we had the same sort of, like, reference base as far as, like, other podcasts.
Right.
And what we wanted out of the show.
I had the same thing that was so, like, because this mainly, like, the two podcasts that I really, like, influenced this from was, like, Pete Holmes, You Made It Weird, and then, like, Mark Maron's, like, WTF, which was just, like, I just liked interviewing people and sort of the... seeing where it all started with people, like, it's just been so cool to have, like, someone like you on that I started with, and, like, I've had a couple of headliners on. It's just, like, it's cool, because you get to see those people. I didn't really want to, like, bring this up too much, but you have a parent that does stand-up, Dwayne Scotty.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, that's super interesting. Like, I've seen her a lot, like, you know, around, and it was just so cool. She was so nice to us, sort of in our underground, like,
yeah,
way that we are. So it was really cool.
That's something I've observed, like, with people I don't know, too. Like, she's always extremely supportive of young comics, like, people just starting out and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, definitely a good person to have in the area.
Right. Did you ever feel like, when you were doing stand-up, like, you had a shadow to, like, overcome with that at all?
Weirdly, no. Like, I definitely think there was, like, always an aspect of, like, I want her to think I'm funny. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, I felt like, and she would co-sign this, I think, like, we have such different approaches.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just, like, generationally different. Like, the things right. we're tapping into are very different. That I think it was pretty easy to sort of, like, not feel that way. I also, I think also the fact that, like, us, because we were not in each other's lives for a long time, and we sort of reconnected over comedy. So I think that aspect of it, just the fact that, like, it wasn't something I felt like I had to do to impress her. It was something I felt like I wanted to do, you know, definitely in part because it's, like, a family thing, and, like, like, I know that's obvious. Like, I knew even when we weren't, you know, talking or whatever, like, I knew that was something that was, like, important to her. And even when I was, like, little, we goofed around a lot of, like, you know, joking around was, like, a very important thing. So I think probably on some level, I was, like, trying to tap into some, like, familial thing there, some, like, parent-child thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also just, like, I started doing it, and my understanding is that, like, she heard that I was doing it and started doing it because, just, like, she, like, from, you know, that sort of cheesy idea that, like, two people can be looking at the same moon. You know, like,
right.
on opposite sides of the world. But I think just, like, that was, like, something she felt inspired to do, knowing I was doing it. And I think also just, like, hoping that that would be a way that we could reconnect. And it ended up being that. And I think, like...
That's super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And sort of for that reason, the nature of it was never, like, all right, well, she... And I think it also helps that, like, she had a lot of her success after starting to get back into it at that point, maybe mm-hmm. like 10 years ago now.
Right.
So I think also, it's not like I felt like I had big shoes to fill or anything like that. It was just sort of like, in a sense, we were both starting. She was starting over.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely more of a camaraderie and just, like, a thing we could connect on, like, emotionally and intellectually than, like,
right.
a competitive thing.
Right. And it must yeah. feel like you have such a distinctive thing with, like, warm things and everything. I know we talked a little bit about stand-up during this. Do you have any, like, aspirations to do it still? Or are you comfortable, like, do you still just prefer to do warm things?
You know what's weird? Maybe it's because I knew that we were doing this, but, like, two nights ago, I had a dream that I showed up to a mic with nothing prepared and just ate shit. And I woke up, and my reaction was like, damn, maybe I want to get back up again.
Right.
Weird, which, like, I feel like if you've got that innate masochism, then maybe,
right.
maybe you owe it to yourself to get back up. So, I have kind of been thinking about it a little bit lately, like, part of me feels like I haven't taken advantage of the fact that I live in, like, you know, I live in Philly.
Yeah, you live in Philly, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, there's, like, a decent scene here, like, what's his name, Lemaire Lee?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he was someone I remembered doing mics with, like, in South Jersey,
right.
ago, And, like, seeing him around and stuff has been very cool. And I know, like, Tiz comes and does shows here sometimes, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I know there's, like, a really solid scene around here. And it's, I kind of, you know, like, I'm pretty happy spectating, you know, just, like, looking on. But part right. of me is, like, maybe I'll give it the old college try again.
Right. It just seems like, from my perspective, like, you have warm things and that's going so well. Like, I saw... Like, I guess it was, like, last year, I guess you were doing stuff with, like, Kurt Bronner, and I was like, this is awesome. Like,
oh, yeah,
just to see that stuff, and be like...
That was all Taylor Allen's.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah, I know what you mean, how that happens.
We're lucky that people like us enough that they're willing to give us opportunities we definitely don't deserve.
Oh, you always feel that way. Like, whenever you get that, like, moment, you're like, oh, this is so crazy. Like, do you know the comedian Gianmarco Cerezzi? Like, have you ever seen his stuff before?
I don't think so.
He's, like, big on, like, TikTok and Instagram. He's, like, a huge comic. And I had him on the podcast, like, because I knew he was going to be special. And when I had him on the podcast, like, 3 weeks later, he had his Comedy Central half hour. And it was just, like... You know, it's so crazy. Like, he's, like, the biggest, like, guest that I've had. It's, like, it's so cool. And whenever I've had, like, a big comic on, the podcast has just been so cool is, like, how they view me as a comic, too. Like, it's such, like, a great, like, feeling. Just they recognize you because they were in your shoes, like, when you're starting out. Like, they remember that whole entire period of when they ate shit for so many years. They, like,
totally,
they sort of just look at you. They, like, they totally get it. It's like,
yeah, like if nothing else, I think like that's a realization everybody has and they respond to it differently, but like everybody at a certain point has the whole thing kind of like demystified a little bit, and you realize like, oh, everybody, regardless of whether or not they're funny or successful, and I do think it's important to put those two things
in
separate buckets.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But everybody's just, like, a person.
Right.
And you are also a person, it turns out.
Right.
Like, you forget, you don't think of yourself as a person until you get to that point. You think of yourself as, yeah, like, kind of like you were saying, like an imposter. Like, you feel like you don't deserve to be in the room or whatever.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's one of the major things that I think, like, that you always deal with comedy. I don't know if you feel this way, because comedy is very much a weird thing, because it's not... really a skill, it's an attribute at best of, and a personality trait at worst of, like, that you're funny, and it's just something you're trying to capitalize on and be like, you know, and to me, I'm always, like, wondering, like, is this something that I'm skilled at, or is it just, like, a natural, like, thing that I was just born with that I can do, and it's such a hard thing, because...
It's gotta be a bit of a...
Yeah.
Right, Michael Phelps or whatever.
Right.
Obviously, someone who puts in the work but also has a freak body that makes
right.
it, you know, like the world's fastest swimmer or whatever.
Right.
It's a little bit of both, and I do think, like, you know, that's also why I was like, you can be successful and or funny. Like, you don't have to be both.
Because people who...
funny to be successful.
Because it's not like... It's also... like, navigation is a big part of it, too. Like, some people are just good at the business side of it and good at, you know, all the stuff that you might not be good at, even though you're good at stage stuff. It's, like, a part of it is, like, a business thing.
Some people can get up and just, like, riff for 20 minutes.
Right.
Just, like, you know, do crowd work or whatever. And then some people need to be very meticulous and like, perform a joke word by
right.
word as they have it written down.
Yeah.
I don't think one is, like, correct.
Right.
Like, if the end product is, like, people are laughing, like, I think it kind of doesn't matter how you get there.
Right. And it's so fascinating to me, like, I've been, since 2020, I've been working on writing, like, an hour that I want to do in 2 years. And it's just, it's funny because, like, you know, you're trying to, like, the thing that's tough is making a narrative, because I don't want it to be, like, a one-man show, I want it to be stand-up, but it's tough because you have to put those things together, you have to make, you know, sort of a narrative, and I imagine that's what you guys kind of have to do with your shows. Like, there's a lot that goes into that of, like, do you guys, I know I've seen it, like, were you guys doing, like, a lot of improv stuff, or was it mostly, like, written?
It's mostly written and, like, kind of performed verbatim. Like, mm-hmm. And that was, like, the value of rehearsals for us, that people could improvise while we were doing that, and then we'd write it in and just make sure everyone's on the same page. Like, Melissa, not that we're, like, bad improvisers, because, like, there have definitely been times where we've had our backs against the wall and had mm-hmm. to, you know, goofball our way out of it. But, like, I think we are both most comfortable when we're performing things as written. And I also think, like, you know, if you've seen the shows, you know that, like, the rhythm is a big part of it.
And, oh, yeah, for sure.
Very up-tempo, very cartoony. And so, like, it kind of has to be that way, because we are often trying to get a ton of information across in, like, a very short span of time.
Right.
But also, that does make the improv moments, like, really kind of pop, right? Because, like, I think a lot of times the audience can tell when something is just, like, has either gone wrong or, like, we've deviated from the script for one
reason right.
or
another. And the thing that I love is that you guys always have, like, I don't mean this in a bad way, but it wasn't always digestible. Like, and that was a good thing, because, like, you could win an audience over with whatever weird idea you have. Like, that's what I love about, like, me doing stand-up, because my stuff is not traditional at all. I'm not able to do observational humor that well. I don't do anything, like, news-related, because I'm just, like, if it's going to be on Facebook and it's going to be done by the late-night host, I'm not going to do it. But if I'm going to write weirder stuff... If you're going to write weirder stuff, you have to do the extra work to make people understand your perspective.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I also think, like, I think that's a really smart calculation, too, because it's like, yeah, like you said, like, you can get that kind of stuff anywhere, and also it's, like we were saying earlier, too, like, you are selling yourself up there. You're trying to...
Right.
You're trying to express something, and, like, expressing how you feel about, like, a news item is kind of whatever.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. Kind of lost my train.
No, I understand what you mean. It's, like, you know, and that's the one thing. It's, like, you're always trying to be, I think, like, creativity just means that. Like, people have that. If you want to be creative, you want to find those different outlets. And you want to find the different ways to do it, which is just so cool. Yeah. Like, what I was always surprised about was, like, how you got those, like, venues, like, early on, like, the House of Independence stuff. I was like, wow, that's really cool. Like, just to be able to get in that. And it feels like...
Yeah.
Was it kind of shocking to you that you were able to make your mark that quickly and, like, get sort of the ball rolling? Or was it, like...
Well, so, House of Independence, we never... produced anything there. That was always us getting booked on other people's stuff.
Right.
Like, Taylor had us on his Super Bowl shows. And we, I think we were only there one other time, which was for Brick and Mortar's release show. Brick and Mortar, great band.
Mm-hmm.
Highly recommend everyone check them out. Sorry, not, wow, holy shit, not Brick and Mortar. I just realized what I said. Bone and Arrow.
Oh, Bone and Arrow. Right, that's what it was.
Also,
yeah, I remember that.
A great band, but I'm talking about Bone and Arrow. Our friends Damon and Jen had booked us to, I don't know, we weren't, like, emceeing, but we were just doing, like, goofy interstitial stuff. So that was cool, and that was, like, very much, that felt like something we were suited to, because, like, they had, like, a variety format set up.
Right.
And that was really cool. But, like, as far as, like, getting stuff booked at the Saint and all that, like, that, I was a little surprised that Scott kept having us back. Like, we had pretty good turnouts for the most part, especially when we first started doing it. But as far as, like, getting in goes, like, it's actually pretty easy to get. I mean, the Saint's, like... Are they closed for good now?
Yeah. That was another place that was a bummer when that happened, because the Saint was such, like, a... They were so good at just it seemed so welcoming what they did with the comedians and everything, and like
yeah.
they had a good like they were having comedians there once in a while, which was great. They would have like Kyle Kinane and stuff, but it was just like it was cool that they let
Todd Barry there.
One yeah, day. It's like it was just cool because they had sort of that thing, and it was just like you know seeing, and that was another just place to have to perform, which was just great because. Yeah. It's so weird to think about. Like, we were really, like, I really give Angela a lot of credit for that. Because, like, when I started, like, my initial goal of doing stand-up, I was not able to because I was a teenager. And because there was nothing in my area. Like, the only thing that was, like, really far away was, like, Stress Factory. And that was, like, the only place. And it was, like, you know. And when Angela started it in, like, 2014, and I joined a year later, it was just, like, cool. And we sort of really, like, just created it. It's, like, crazy to think about.
Yeah.
Like, it just went...
Yeah, it is wild just, like, finding local businesses that are kind of, like, willing to let you squat there after hours or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, the same... I mean, Scott was, like, the best for letting people put stuff up. Like, Joe McAndrew's show, that was great. That went
oh, yeah.
Like, till they...
Probably, yeah, that went till right? they closed, like, yeah.
Yeah, so, and Scott, like, loved it. Like, he was super supportive, not just of, like, the idea of having people there, but, like, would always, like, come up to, like, me and Melissa and, like, you know, talk about the show after and, like, offer suggestions on just, like, how to format it. Like, eventually, we switched over from, like, just doing scene after scene after scene to basically, like, having, like, kind of quote unquote like commercial breaks where like we do a scene in the broader story of the show and then that would be punctuated with like stand up or music.
Right,
or
right.
So it was like kind of more of a variety show.
Yeah.
And that was like that was all him and his investment.
Oh wow. That's like a great idea though.
Product.
Cause that was
what's that?
That was a great thing because it was also that was one of the things that was great. It was just like it wasn't, like, a forced thing, either. Like, if you wanted to do stand-up or you just wanted to perform, like, you'd find some way to put people on the show. It wasn't like, oh, you have to be part of this, you know, this sketch to be on. You were like, you know, if you want to do this, you just found a way to fit it in. And it was super cool to have that. I want to ask you, because we talked earlier about the Chop Suey thing, and I listened to the song that you put out, The Rations song?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was really good. I mean, do you have, like, do you work on a lot of music?
Yeah, so that, I was going to mention that also about the thing, is, like, that's how I knew Scott and to even reach out to him as, like, a possible place was that I was playing bands and stuff before I was doing comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, like, as that sort of, like, scaled back in my life a little bit, which hopefully we're going to start doing stuff again soon. Like, Melissa just moved to Philly, too, so there's, like, kind of no excuse for us to stop. But, yeah, I mean, I'm always, like, I've kind of never stopped writing music, period. And I just, like, I had that idea for a song, and it seemed simple enough for me to do on my own, because, like, I write a lot of songs. I'm not, like, a great player, so I can kind of, like, fudge my way through things a little bit. This also got reignited a little bit during the pandemic. Like, some guys I used to play in a band with who are mostly, like, professional musicians now have become, like, professional musicians in the past, like, 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
They had no work. For that time.
Oh, right, because of COVID.
And they were like, and this was like, I don't know, late teens, early 20s, we played together, and like, a lot, we're all very close friends also, so like, we got to talking about like, some ideas for songs that we had started putting together kind of like, as things were tapering off with us, and so we were also working on that stuff. And then when things kind of, you know, lockdown ended and live shows started happening again, they became less and less available. So I still had the bug and I was like, well, I mean, I guess I can just do it myself, you know, like program a friggin' drum machine or whatever and go to town.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah, I love that. I'm working on some other stuff with a friend of mine, Tyler Schmall, who's just a Twitter guy, like a writer I know from Twitter. And so hopefully we'll have that stuff done relatively soon too. But yeah, I want to keep putting stuff out.
Yeah, it is so crazy how, like, with the internet has been, like, how quickly you can find people and everything.
Yeah.
It really is wild. Like the thing that I never do is, like, I never go through management for my podcast and anything. So, like, any headliner that I've ever had on, it's, like, I message them on Facebook or Instagram, and it's just, like,
yeah,
it's cool. It's just, like, works. You don't have to go through any type of, like, management or anything or just be, like, you know. Because if you just meet people as, like, they are, as, like, a fellow comedian or a fellow artist, they're just, like, okay. Or that's sort of like it worked that way.
Exactly.
People like that collaborative thing of like, okay, someone actually like took the guts to do it, and it's so cool.
Totally.
But yeah, so to hear that you started with the performing and music, do you feel like that translated well when you started doing stand up? Like that sort of stage energy, or was it harder, do you think, to be like there without an instrument, like, kind of...
Yeah, definitely way scarier in that regard, but I think the fact that I always was, like, the worst musician in the band, like, not that the guitar was a prop, like, I was always playing.
Right.
But not having that felt almost a little more natural, I guess. It is way fucking scarier when you can't have four other people up there with you to rely on or whatever.
Right.
And
yeah.
Again, that is kind of what I loved about the Warm Thing shows was like,
right.
It wasn't just me, but
right.
I mean, like, as far as like the craft goes, like I do think there's definite value to like I always, God help me. I loved bantering between songs. So like,
right.
In that regard, I feel like I was always doomed to.
I hear that a lot. Like with comedians that were musicians and aren't musicians. And it's so funny, like, that saying is totally true from what I've heard. It's like, all rock stars want to be comedians, all comedians want to be rock stars. It's totally true. Like,
yeah.
every musician I see, like, they do banter, and I'm like, I talk to them off stage, I'm like, these guys are funny. Like, they can do comedy.
Yeah, it is a real thing, for sure.
Right.
I think the other thing that's helpful with comedy is, like, especially once you get to the point where you're not just sort of like stumbling through one or two premises at an open mic, like you actually have to put a set together.
Oh, yeah. When you actually have that.
You think about jokes as songs a little bit more as like.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Like,
I can see that.
You think about like the start and end point, and
right.
It helps you sort of like build the flow of one bit into the other.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like
transitions as like a device instead of just like something that has to be like naturally occurring.
Right.
It's something you can build.
Yeah, that was one of my biggest things is like I try not to be snobby about like I never took like a comedy class or anything. I did improv for many years, but like to me it was just like I'm always like very proud of myself that with stand up I like learned to do it on my own. And for many years, like for the first 2 years, really, I didn't technically know how to write a joke. I just had really weird premises. And then once I got the formula down...
That's like everybody.
Yeah.
Very few people understand what a joke is.
Like, I see people now that have it, like, right away. They, like, know how to do the set, know how to do the punchline. For me, I had no idea. I was just like... I had these word promises, and I was like, once I learned how to do the formula, I was like, okay, now you just try and keep it, like, each thing.
Yeah.
It's still a hard thing, because each joke is so different. You're just like, okay, how do I get this in things? And I know, like, once I have the rhythm of things, it's going to go well. It's just the, like,
yeah.
Starting out of, like, okay. Because, like, you know, it's so hard to talk about him, but, like, Louis C.K. had that great bit in one of his specials. Like, the first thing you say, it's, like, it's going to be dog shit. And it's totally true. It's, like, the first thing that you really try to start out with on stage can be really tough. Because, like,
yeah, for sure.
You just have so many avenues that you can go through. You're just like, okay, I can go to this bit, and this bit, maybe this will work. And
there is always that tension with stand-up, where it's like, and I've heard people talk about this too, where, like, stand-up's different from you know, music or any other art form, because you're only looking to solicit one type of response.
One type of response,
like,
right.
People to laugh. So there's the constant tension of, like, needing to do something to